Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of December 21st. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Saturday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud? You awake?
Pardon me? Wait, hold on a second. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, actually. I've been awake for, 40 minutes now, so I'm pretty chipper.
Yeah, well...
I know. you've been up since the crack of dawn.
Dawn wasn't even cracking at that time.
Okay, well, you cracked it.
I cracked dawn open here.
Poor girl.
Way to get off on the right foot here, yeah. So I cracked dawn open this morning, and we're going to drink some coffee together. I might even have coffee.
You got to get Tony Orlando out of the picture, dude.
I think Tony Orlando is the least of my problems. That old guy.
Yeah, well, he's older than I am, so yeah, probably using a walker now.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's good to be back. How's your off season workout program going here? Mine is going very well.
Let's not talk about that. I've been nose to the grindstone and so on and so forth, been bearing down, doing blog stuff and trying to do other research and things. So,
okay, well, good. I've been resting some more, but it seems like coronavirus is not resting at all.
No.
And it's winning. It's really winning. So I don't even know what to say anymore. I just want to thank all the frontline people out there, and thank goodness there's a vaccine on now, but that doesn't mean it's time to let the guard down. We still have to stay vigilant.
Yeah, so let's stay careful.
All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with former Yakult closer Tony Barnett. We're going to discuss the Swallows, MVPs, and other awards, free agents, and a lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so former Swallows reliever and current Yakult advisor Tony Barnett and I sat down, I guess it was Wednesday morning here in Japan. He's in Arizona now. He's living close to fellow former Swallows star and fellow advisor Aaron Guile, who was on the show. Now, Tony was on the show this year. Remember back in February in the coffee shop in the hotel in Okinawa?
And he was on last year as well, I think, when I got him in Arizona. So
Right. So, and I told him, you'll hear me say it at the end of this interview, man, we love the guy, and we always appreciate him coming on and taking the time and sharing his thoughts with us. But we also appreciate him as the player and the guy he was here when he was spending 2010 to 2015 with the Yakult Swallows, and was one of the few pitchers you really found success here, and then took it back to the United States and was able to make the major leagues. And he pitched 3 years after he left the Swallows. He pitched 3 years with the Texas Rangers and then spent a year with the Chicago Cubs and then went into retirement. And I would say he was a regular on the show during his time here when we went out to Jingu, when in the before time when we could go out to stadiums and talk to players without having to go through the PR department. That seems
it is so much like Mad Max Back to Thunderdome kind of thing. It's like we're trying to, this pandemic has just put a before and after on our lives.
Right. Yeah. It's going to put a very ugly time stamp on a lot of things. But Tony was a regular on the show before, and he is a semi-regular now here, especially among the off-season guests we have. And he's a dear friend of the show. And he talks about, in our interview, he talks about the new acquisitions the Swallows brought in quickly after the season ended and much more. So let's check out Tony Barnett. All right. We are pleased to be joined by Tony Barnett, Yakult Swallows advisor and pro scouting. How you doing, man? It's good to talk to you. Good to hear your voice again. Last time we spoke, it was in a little coffee shop in February down in Okinawa.
John, how are you, man? I'm doing well. I'm missing that coffee shop in Okinawa right now.
We didn't have to wear masks. We were concerned about the coronavirus, but not worried. It was a different time. Definitely a different time.
Man, it was a different world we lived in back in February, wasn't it?
Telling me. All right, well, let's get to it now. The team did not do well again this season. Fans of the Yakult Swallows, while they're not suicidal, I think some are seeking therapy. So you're involved in the search for imports, and there are areas, I suppose, on the team that you identify as areas of need. But sometimes when you're searching for a foreign player, do you just go for the best available player, or do you really just focus on hitting your target?
This is my first year doing this, and we had a couple targets, third base and starting pitching. We kind of wanted to, the Ekholt needed to go out, and they wanted to acquire some guys there, and we did that. And that was my first go around with the signings. So going forward, we'll see how much we are attracted towards the best player available as opposed to filling needs. But as of right now, as of this year, we were definitely in a fill some need situation, and we did that with Cy and Jose.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the things that are important? I want to start with pitching, since you are such a successful pitcher in Japan. What are some of the things that are important in finding a pitcher who can succeed in MPP?
Man, it's a person-to-person basis, a guy-to-guy basis. From my own perspective, I will never want to cookie-cut somebody saying you have to do these certain things to be successful somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I look back at my own career, I wasn't cookie-cut, and, I had to march to the beat of my own drum to be successful. So there's a multitude of things that you look at as far as makeup and just stuff-wise, as far as what you're looking for on the mound, as far as velocity and angle and what they present and the competitor's mentality. All of these things come into play, analytics, spin rates. We could rattle off everything that we're looking for in guys, but, the fact of the matter is you're looking for a competitor that can come in and possibly win right now. At the end of the day, that's pretty much what you want out of one of the foreigners that you acquire is, we're not in a development mode. It's a win-now mentality. It's a come up, it's a show up and, succeed. There's not a lot of wiggle room for failure when there's a roster limit.
Right. How important is the velocity aspect? Because I know in the States they just start there.
Well, I think we all do. In baseball, whether you're a fan or a scout or a player on the other side, velocity is one of the first things that gets mentioned in the room. What's the velocity? Where's he at? So it kind of sets the bar of, okay, what kind of pitcher do we have on here? Is he, a hard thrower or soft tosser? And velocity is definitely important. But at the end of the day, can you get outs is the most important. We would like to have a guy that throws hard, strikes out a lot of guys, because that's just the way that baseball is moving. The three true outcomes, walk, strikeout, or home run.
Right.
In line of that notion, you're looking for a guy that can strike people out. I think we've addressed that with Cy. Cy Sneed coming in. He's a big, tall guy with a big body and a big fastball, and I think he's going to do fairly well.
Now, I was going to get to those guys in a minute, but let's go ahead and get into Cy now. What do you think about? You said he's big, he throws hard. What about the command of secondary and tertiary pitches? Is that a big deal when you're looking at foreign pitchers too coming in, and how does he rate in that area?
He's got good stuff. We wouldn't have looked at him otherwise. But also, we'll have to see how guys react to a different baseball in their hand.
Mm.
People
forget about that. That's a great point. People forget that the ball's different.
Man, well, if you remember back my first year, we were still using, I think, like three different baseballs.
Right.
And that's an old scar for me that won't heal. like the bad dream of waking up and using the wrong ball. So when you do get a different baseball in your hand, it does make a difference. I know in years past they've kind of started to make it. Everyone's trying to get towards one kind of style of baseball, but the Japanese baseball is still different, and stuff breaks off differently. So that'll be something he feels out in spring, and there's so much time in spring training to feel that and to talk about it and to get into camp and start to learn what your stuff is going to do with the baseball in that atmosphere off those mounds. And it's something that I'm not worried about. He's got big league stuff. He's already proven that,
mm-hmm.
And now if we can just continue to hone it and get him to, and if command can sharpen as he gets older and as he goes on, then that'll only be a plus.
Yeah, I think you and Ryan Vogelsong are having similar dreams about the different baseballs, but
yeah, that I feel like that's one of those things. Like it's one of those bad dream stories I tell everybody where I'm in the middle of a bullpen, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you're not using that ball." And I'm like, "Excuse me, pardon me, I'm working here, and you're telling me I'm using the wrong tool."
Yeah, he didn't like that at all. All right, so what about Jose? Now you guys, you talked about first base. He's a first baseman, outfielder. You've got also Munetaka Murakami. He plays first base. He plays third base. You also got Seiichi Uchikawa coming in as a free agent. So it seems to be crowded at those corner spots. What
well,
is going
we
on?
Went on got, you're talking about Ozuna, right?
Right.
Well, he's a third baseman.
And that's that.
Yeah, so we got him to shore up the third base spot. Obviously, with Murakami at first base and Uchikawa coming in, you know, veteran first baseman Uchikawa, he's a guy that's been around. He can definitely be a asset to the club. Murakami, obviously, we're just going to leave him, you know, hopefully just leave him there, keep him healthy, and let him continue to play. So with that, him over at first base, Ozuna over at third base, hopefully we can get the production out of Ozuna that we're anticipating, and, you know, that would be a good one. That would be a good first base, third base combo.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you've got the combo there, but that does sort of kind of create a logjam. Obviously, Ozuna can play the outfield as well. So I guess if injuries play a role, is that part of the – I mean, because part of the situation Swallows is that the injuries –
where's the logjam at third base?
No, logjam on the infield is my point.
Let's be honest. You know, Murakami's got first base. That's his job. You know, so I don't think there's really a logjam. Uchikawa, I'm not into personnel decisions
right.
like that, like on-field personnel decisions. So I can't tell you what their game plan is for playing time with him. I don't imagine it's going to be a large role as far as playing time, simply because Murakami is, I mean, if he continues on this path, he's just a certified every year all-star and he's going to do amazing things in this game.
Agreed.
Outside of that, I really don't see a logjam there. I see it working out. I mean, hopefully injuries keep themselves at bay. But if there is a little bit of a depth jam, then it's a good problem to have from our standpoint. You know, players may not like it, but as long as I think depth is one of the things that Yakult has lacked in years past. So if we have a little bit more depth this go around, I think it wouldn't be a bad thing.
And that's what I was getting to. I was going to say I think it's a great thing because in the past the injury bug has not just snacked on the Yakult Swallows, it has feasted, and that has been an issue. So I think creating that layer of insurance or having somebody who can come in and not have the situation drop off is a big
right.
a big part of what you're doing. So.
I agree. In years past, I mean, you say it's feasted on the Swallows, where I don't think it bit the Swallows more than it has any other team. It's just a more glaring, you know, obvious situation when it happens to Yakult because the depth has been low. So the separation between, you know, player A and player B, the drop-off has been fairly dramatic when an injury does happen.
Right. All right, now we had this question earlier in the season, and I'd like to swing it over to you. We had it from a fan, and he asked, with so many 30-something free agents out there in the major leagues who are out of work, maybe the interest level in guys trying to experience what it's like to make the jump to MPB is up higher. So what have you seen in terms of that situation, in terms of interest from maybe some free agents who weren't previously interested in making the jump to MPB?
You know, I've thought that myself as well with the climate in the MLB, the way it is with free agency crawling, the way it has the last few years, the way that, you know, with the MLB not even being sure of the rules that it's going to move forward with, is doing a huge disservice to the free agent market. But I haven't heard many rumblings on my end about guys that are, you know, too impatient about it. I've definitely fielded some calls from guys who start to see the walls closing in, so to speak, as far as, you know, age and time. You know, for the most part, as far as guys that are that should have jobs in the United States, as far as major league jobs, you know, I really haven't seen a lot of panic from them. To be honest with you, I really haven't seen that yet. I think a lot of people are just playing the waiting game with the MLB and free agency. And once guys like, I mean, once you see a certain few guys fall, which you hope would be sooner than later, you know, you'll start to see other names come off the board as well. It usually happens that way. But free agency is at an absolute snail's pace. I would like to see, obviously, like more guys with like bigger names make the jump. Because I think, you know, like if you can get, you know, somebody else like Adam Jones to come over, because I think he's, I think guys like him are great for the game, no matter what country they're playing in. I don't know how Adam fully finished up over there, but I know he had some success. But, you know, just his character and him being who he is, I think he's fantastic for the game of baseball. And I think if we could get more players on that level to kind of just make the jump preemptively across to Japan, you know, I would really like to see that. I really would. I think it can grow the game in Japan, and I think it could help grow the game internationally as well.
Yeah, you took my guy. I was going to say a lot of people, I think, saw the Adam Jones move, and I think a lot of fans anticipated more players such as that type of player, that where he is in his career, 30-something, has a big name, has some game, and can bring some major league experience to the bench on some team, and possibly possibly help develop some guys as you go along, because it's not just the name, it's the production. But you know, part of that is learning how to be productive, and I think those players with experience can do that.
I agree, and I think we saw that out of Andrew Jones when he came over with Rockettstown as well.
Definitely. All right, so for Swallows fans, I'm not sure if you got to see much of Okugawa last year, but I think they're anticipating that he's going to be part of the I don't know, maybe not the rotation so much, but part of the first team roster and have some production next year. What did you see from him when he got his starts late in the season, if you got a chance to see that?
I only got to see some snippets, mm-hmm. so I didn't get to see the full production, which I would like to. You know, I don't want to make any judgments off of highlights when it comes to a young pitcher.
Sure.
You know, I would really like to see the full body of work, like the full five innings and stuff like that. But, you know, the videos I have seen of him from bullpen sessions, and, you know, especially when I was down there in spring training, you know, messing around with some of the guys, and they're showing, you know, especially some of the guys that I play with who are scouting and working in the coaching field now out there, you know, they're showing me videos of him as well. And, you know, I'm definitely impressed with his stuff, you know, with just his makeup on the mound. No judgments from me. I just, you know, hope he continues to develop, and, you know, he's a tall kid with a good fastball, man. I'd really like to see him just flourish.
Yeah, he's so young. I mean, I'm glad he was able to get
right,
a taste.
You know, and so, like, and in Japan, they, I mean, like we saw with Yamada when he got called up in the Climax Series back in 11? Was that 11 or 12?
Oh. don't ask the older guy.
That was 11. That was 11 when Yamada got called up in his, you know, from the first time in the Climax Series, and, you know, had like an RBI double. You know, so, I mean, you know, it's not against the rules for young guys to come up and be successful.
Right.
I think it can be I think it can be a little bit more glaring for pitchers.
Sure.
You know, simply because if you don't do well and you're a top prospect, you know, the heat's on, the pressure's on. And as a starting pitcher, I mean, a bad start, that's a whole week away from makeup.
Definitely.
So I just like to see him continue to develop, you know, continue to gain strength and just continue to hone his craft as he goes on. And, you know, I think the rest of us should just kind of sit back and let him work and watch what he has to offer.
Sure, yeah. I was glad he was able to get a taste of, you know, what it's like to be up there on the top team and and see
it's
what the level of competition exactly. All right, last one, and we'll let you go to sleep here. Why should Swallows fans have a reason to have expectations for next season?
I mean, that's a good question. But I think they should have, I mean, because it's just, you know, the Yakult Swallows going in, the personnel that they have on the field, you know, there's no lack of effort on the player's end. There mm-hmm. really isn't. You know, you have two of the most dynamic players in the league on your team with Murakami and Yamada. you know, need some starting pitching. We need starting pitching to hold its ground. We really need the bullpen to shore up and, you know, hammer some things down and, you know, get sharp quick. And if, you know, we just, you know, the Swallows just need to put it all together. They really do. Again, but the players are good. They really are. They're in a tough league with tough teams. It's a tough game, but, you know, they're going to go out there. I think this year is going to be different than this last year. Takatsu settled in. We're bringing back Tomohito Ito as the pitching coach. I really think that there's the guys there to do the damage that needs to be done to make a playoff run. Putting it together is a hard thing to do for any team.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're the Yakult Swallows, you kind of, you know, you're the homegrown, you're the grassroots team. So those winning seasons seem to kind of float fewer and farther between. But, you know, the players are there, the talent is there, and, you know, it's just a matter of staying healthy and putting the product together when it's time to, when the lights turn on.
All right, well, I know the lights are about to go out in your house. We appreciate you. We love you. We always think about you. I see you on Twitter. I keep thinking about you and the games that you threw out here and having flashbacks of you doing all kinds of things on the mound to get guys out. So we really appreciate it, your work and your efforts here. And we're always thinking about you and Aaron. So we'll have you on again sometime next year, hopefully, and talk about the Swallows again, bud.
Well, hopefully we keep these jobs so that you guys can be stuck with us for quite some time. You know, we enjoy coming on. You know, and I've got a good guy to work with in Aaron, you know, so I'm not leaving anytime soon.
Excellent, excellent. All right, take it easy. Thank you very much. Have a happy holidays.
All right, John. Yeah, you as well. Be good yourself.
All right, so other than the scar of the three kinds of baseballs he was forced to use in his MPB days, that's the olden days of MPB before they started with the unified baseball, what stood out for you?
Other than, well, first of all, that was kind of the highlight for me, because that's like so nostalgic. And he had kind of a Tale of Two Cities experience with that, because when he arrived, he was a starter. And
correct, I remember.
And,
yes.
And just to tell you, the listeners in the really before time, in the before world when Japan MPB games were played with baseballs made from about five or six different companies. And they all had different properties. And it used to be the case that I think a week before a team was scheduled to visit another club's park, a case of baseballs would arrive for the starting pitchers to practice with in their bullpens in the run-up to the series.
Okay.
But the relievers didn't get that.
You guys don't count.
Well, if they were in my bullpen, they couldn't count. But no, it was a case of, yeah, so when I heard that, I thought, wow. And so there's that. So I was flattened by that, because I remembered how it was and I remembered how everybody thought how crazy it was. But to get a firsthand experience of that real before Japan unified baseball life was really great. Now, what I wanted to ask you, so I never spoke to Ryan Vogelsong at any length about the baseballs. We talked about all kinds of stuff, but I don't remember talking about the different baseballs. And so where did that come from?
I was out at Tokyo Dome one day, and I don't know if you remember Ryan, but on pitching days, he wouldn't talk to you. So if he was walking in from the outfield, and mm-hmm. you approached him on pitching day when he was starting,
yeah,
he would grunt at you and say, "I'm pitching today." And so I stayed away. But on days that he wasn't pitching, boy, was he a loquacious guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we stood out on the, I guess, the third baseline
mm-hmm.
for about 10, 15 minutes. And he railed about the baseballs and the fact that, and I think this was during an interleague stretch, obviously. I think he was with Oryx at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he just railed about the baseballs, about how they're different balls. And you go to a different park and there's a different ball. You go, you cross over and play in interleague, there's a different ball. There's a different ball for this and that and the other. And he just, it seemed to frustrate him. And I think he even told me one day, he said, look, I was on the mound the other day, and anytime I tried to control or command the baseball and make it do something, you know, I got whacked around. Anytime I just held it in my hand randomly and just tried to throw it straight, I got results. I don't know what to do. You know, okay. He was just totally at a loss. So that's where that came from.
Well, Ryan was great. And so it was the balls was really interesting. The idea of a nightmare, I think, is really good. It really puts it into place. And I want to say something. What is it about Yakult that their scouts are all these really quotable and really astute? You know, because with Aaron Guile, when we did his interview, or actually when you did his interview, all I can think of was, wow, he hit it on the head. And here I'm thinking with Tony, I'm going, wow, he hit it on the head. These guys are really good speaking and expressing themselves. And I really enjoyed that. I also want to comment on that. I loved what he said about how his talent wanted to defy being pigeonholed in the States.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And Japan is a great place for good players who are available, because MLB teams don't know what to do with their skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they can't. I've heard this. Jeremy Powell said the same thing. You're a big guy. You should be throwing four seam fastballs. End of story.
Right.
And it wasn't his. It wasn't his. You know, his best pitch. But now four seam fastballs, and you know, and he got it, and he got it, and he got it. But he basically didn't dust off the curveball that had been his pitch in high school until he came back to Japan. And it really made him, gave him and extended his career life.
Mm-hmm.
Itch that MLB was basically trying to get him not to throw. So I like that. And I think that is really a thing about Japan. And so there's that. And the other thing I want to mention is that I really appreciate the way he's non-committal about complex issues that aren't really knowable.
You know,
you ask, you know, like what works in Japan, and he said, like, well, you know, depends on who it is, you know. And I think that comes from somebody who wasn't the cookie cutter, you know, who wasn't the cookie cutter type baseball player, and knowing that. You know, everybody can succeed if they've got something that will get, you know, every pitcher can succeed if they got something that will get people outs and they can adjust from it. So I really like that. It's kind of a scientific way of looking that you at baseball, in that we don't really know until we see it and test it out.
Yeah. Well, I got to catch you again, mischaracterizing my question. Not
I'm
necessarily.
Sorry. I didn't
ask what worked in Japan.
Like I usually do.
Okay, yeah. The question to him was, what kinds of things are important in finding pitchers who can succeed in Japan, was the question.
Okay. That's okay. Fair enough. But the answer was...
I know you like to, simplify my questions in your head. So
I was not really thinking about the question. I was only concerned with the answer. So.
Okay, that's okay. That's all right. So for me, you know, I took the opportunity, because this is a podcast and I value the listener's time, I actually shortened it. But for me, the thing that really kind of stood out in this interview was the long pause that he took when I asked him about the expectations for the Swallows for next season. Now, like I said, for the purposes of saving time on the show, I took a couple seconds out of it, but I almost asked him, excuse me, are you there? Did you hear me? Because he took such a long time to think and ponder over the question. I think it's a precarious situation. I mean, if you answer the question and say, I think Yakult fans should have some expectations, or, you know, they should expect to see this, that, and the other, and they don't see it next year, they're, you know, now you're at fault. And if you don't put the expectations high, now you're shooting down the season before it starts, so to speak. I mean, not effectively, he's not going to have an impact on the team and how the results are going to go, but it's about expectations, right? Where do you want to set that bar? So I thought it was a difficult question, but I knew he would answer it because I know he takes the time, and he always does this. And this is another reason why we love him. He always takes the time to actually give us an answer to the question, not just fill in the blank with, you know, one of the expressions from the four below. You know, he doesn't, you talk about the cookie cutter, but it's not a question and answer quiz here. He takes time to actually write an essay for us and tell us what he's thinking. So he did take that time, and you know, we got a good answer from him, but I think it was more about the fact that he took so much time that, like I said, I left some time in just so that listeners got an idea that he was taking his time and taking a pause. But I did shorten it quite a bit because, like I said, I value the listener's time, and nobody wants to hear a lot of silence there. So, what is that? How do you answer that question, though? I thought it was a really tough question. I was going to tell him before the interview that, look, you know, I had some softball questions lined up, but I wanted to ask you a few more important questions because this team has been struggling, right?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. No, I want to just comment quickly on that point. That's a really hard question for people with teams to answer.
Correct.
Having dealt with some people who used to work for DNA, that was always really prickly with their owner, who has sort of like, who built her own software gaming business and then runs a baseball team where, you know, she can't control everything, but she basically says, you know, we're going 100%. We're not stopping for anybody. And she expects people to say that, you know, baseball people are going to tell you, you know, if you're the scouting players, you've got to think that you've got to focus on the positives. And the reason I say, I don't mean that to be sort of euphemistic or, you know, psychological, but everybody's got negatives unless they're Mike Trout or Mookie Betts.
Everybody has their faults somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But
That wasn't a strike, Mookie, you know, so, you know, do better next time you bowl, you know, or shoot the basketball from 40 feet away. So
you saw that video too? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I've seen it. He's multi-talented. So the point being that everybody's got negatives. And if you want to start checking off the negatives, there's basically nobody can play anything because everybody's got them. So you have to focus on the positives, and you have to believe they're going to be enough to make it work. Once you make a decision on a guy, you decide, you say, okay, these are the things, maybe you have checklists of things to fix, but you got to be focusing on the positive. And if you're the manager of a team, you have to believe that your team has a chance to win if things go right and players develop and players stay healthy. And every time somebody in the DNA BayStars said, you know, we think we can win a championship, the owners, you know, the lights went off in the pinball machine in the owner's office. And okay, we have a strong team and we're winning. Okay, well then as soon as they're not winning, it's how come we're not winning and whose fault is it?
Yep.
Now, I don't know that's the dynamic of that, but I did hear from a former international director who said the pressure is on there 100% all the time, and it can break you. And if you're a scout, you know you may want to say, okay, we think this is the truth, but I think there are teams where if that's become the mindset that the team is a championship team, then saying you're not a championship team, you know, could get you fired.
True. Or just saying, we think we have a playoff contender here. Are you a playoff team or are you just contending for a playoff spot? I mean, be specific, you know, be straight. So yeah, it is a difficult question, and I knew it was. And I think Tony, by now, talking to us through the years, knows he doesn't have to answer questions that would put him in a difficult situation. But and I didn't think that would. But yeah, that is a difficult question to answer. You know, how honest can you really be? And like he said, he didn't actually get to watch a lot of the home games, a lot of the away games. He saw some highlights. He saw some things that were streamed, but he lives in the States. It's hard to get access to the games. The time is different too. So, but he did get to watch, and I find that fascinating too, that even within these teams, they have these advisors, but they have them stationed stateside. There's not a lot of access for them to watch highlights or to watch video of the players all the time. I guess it has to be, the old fashioned way, put on DVDs and sent through the mail or something like that.
Well, they have the Swallows because they're part owned by Fuji Television, Fuji Sankei Group.
Right.
Right. Their home games are always on Fuji. And I believe Fuji has an international streaming.
That helps. Yeah.
So I think you can pick up, if you have the contract to get Fuji's stream, you can get some of the Swallows home games overseas.
Yeah. And again, that's, you're talking about a time difference that would make it difficult to watch, but I know he gets up early, so that helps. So let's transition. Let's talk about the Swallows a little bit. And they're bringing in, as Tony talked about, right-handed pitcher Cy Sneed. So he's got a great name, obviously. And then Jose Osuna, and infielder, outfielder. And, I did talk to Tony and tell him that maybe there might be a logjam. And he suggested straight out that this other pickup, that Seiichi Uchikawa, who has won batting titles both in the Central League and the Pacific League, who's now joining the Swallows as a free agent. And I suggested there might be a logjam, and he talked about the fact that, no, that just adds some depth to the team. He didn't see. Now, he also said he's not privy to the strategies and the way that the field manager is going to use him. Mm-hmm. But he did say that he doesn't anticipate Uchikawa being someone who's going to be in the field a lot. So that seemed to me to suggest that, Uchikawa is going to be more of a pinch hitting spot starter kind of guy here and there, play against specific teams, specific pitchers, and situations. So, and that's good. That just, that team is old in some areas with Norichika Aoki in the outfield as well. So, getting those guys some time off, going left and right, platooning, that could be a situation that they might employ down the road or at times this season. So that might help. But these new players, I don't know. They seem to have signed. I wasn't really paying attention. As soon as the season officially ended, I tried to get some rest, and I just was going to sleep earlier. I was sleeping longer, and obviously I'm watching I'm watching Twitter as much as possible, reading as many news items as I can in Japanese. And I did notice that the Swallows immediately signed these two players, like straight after the season, maybe sooner than any other team had signed some foreign players. So I'm not sure. It's been a real challenge for the Swallows, especially the fans. I say that because we follow NPB Reddit on Twitter, and he is a Swallows fan, and it just seemed like, he was taking toy guns and playing Russian roulette a lot of the time through the season. But the past seven seasons, they finished in fifth once. There was a Central League title in 2015, and they were second in 2018, but the Swallows have finished in last place. It really has been a challenge.
No, it's tough. It's tough for them.
Yeah, and I think we knew Alcides Escobar was maybe we knew that they decided not to bring him back from the way that they played him. I think they couldn't excommunicate him like they normally do and send foreign players they don't find a use for anymore. And I mean Japanese teams. In general, if they don't find much use for you, they usually send you to the farm team and you don't see him. But they moved him off of short over to third. They kept not, he had spotty playing time. He was moved around in the batting lineup. So I think they told us with the way that they played him that they weren't interested in bringing him back. But that's pretty much the pre-ex-girlfriend treatment, right? When you get all those warning signs.
No, I think you're right on. You're pretty much spot on. Obviously, Alcides Escobar, I don't know what the thought process was. I'm sure it was more of a case of, well, we think his, even though his, you know, his, this is what he was in MLB, that he'll have a, he has a niche skill that will allow him to succeed in Japan. And that niche was awfully small, or turned out to be awfully small in practice. And he, you know, he was a basically an empty, you know, singles hitting, a guy who didn't hit a lot of, who basically didn't hit for average and hit basically all singles and was an infielder. You know, I mean, was a guy on the left side of the infield who isn't what he was 10 years ago.
Yep. So, with these two players, they signed them early. They'll probably, with COVID and everything, everybody will have to do everything a little bit earlier. We have the Olympics scheduled for next year, so we'll have an adjusted schedule that's going to start earlier, and you know, everything's going to have to happen fast.
Hey, even for us, 2020.
Yeah. So, the Swallows will look for, you know, we'll see what happens with their off season and their preseason and spring training and who else they bring in, and hopefully they can, you know, I had predicted a fifth place finish. I was thinking that they were going to move up, but they did not. So,
I mean, it was a reasonable guess. I mean, if Tetsuto Yamada is Tetsuto Yamada, it's hard for them to finish sixth all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't really have a good season. So,
no, he didn't. So we look for better things for them next year. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the MVPs. The announcement came on Thursday night, and it was no surprise at all.
No.
On either side, Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants was the MVP in the Central League, and the Hawks, Yuki Yanagita, the MVP in the Pacific League. And I mean, I think we talked about the few times that we even mentioned it on the show. Mm-hmm. So there were no surprises, no casting of aspersions because the media got it wrong. I think that was in the case of Sugano, I think it was probably the best choice. They could have gone with a hitter, but for me, I think that was a team that basically was the elite team in the league, and everybody contributed heavily to it winning. And it almost was not in doubt after about, I don't know, midway through July. So what was there to really talk about? Just pick a guy and go with him. I thought it was okay. He probably could have gone with Kazuma Okamoto because he had such good numbers.
In my opinion, he was more valuable than Sugano. But,
yeah, well, you know my opinion on the pitcher anyway. I mean, a guy who's pitching every fifth day is not really going to impact
right,
you that much, unless he does what Masahiro Tanaka did, which was to save the bullpen in 2013, save the bullpen every time he went out.
Didn't, so there.
Right. Of course, so,
right. I actually voted for Tanaka that year, although it required some sort of adjustment because I still didn't think he was absolutely the most valuable, but you know, you got to give credit to the pennant winners. So
sure. So, I wasn't banging on the desk or I wasn't screaming or hitting the ceiling.
Either. Yeah. I predicted this because,
I think we both did, and we said it on the show.
You know, the Giants had three big wheels. I mean, they had two big offensive wheels, Okamoto and Sakamoto. And Okamoto was clearly the guy, and I thought he was just outstanding, and he was outstanding playing third base, which was his weak position until this season. And Sugano was the headliner. And if you've got, you know, two players who are really good, if you've got two position players who's really good, and you got one pitcher who's in the headlines all the time for this, that, and the other, you know, the reporters are going to go with, you know, one of these things ain't like the other.
Right.
And so it was an easy choice, you know, and I guess my experience with Japanese award voting is the easy choice is always the best choice. The safest choice is always the best choice.
And also rookies of the year, the top rookies were in the Pacific League. I'll let you do the announcements, Jim, since you were so into it.
The top rookie in the Pacific League was Kaima Taira, the right-handed, hard-throwing youngster from the Cebu Lions. He got 144 votes, just edging Hiroto Kobukata, the Rakuten Eagles' nifty young shortstop. And so that was a vote. I voted for Kobukata, and I predicted he would win, because usually if guys play every day, position players play every day, and they actually produce in the field and at the plate, they generally win. But somebody liked the idea of a young kid throwing 99 miles an hour.
Picture that in Japan, yeah. Even.
Yeah, he's fun too. I mean, he's a joyful guy. So like that. And in the Central League, it was hands down Masato Morishita of the Hiroshima Carp, 303 votes out of 313 cast. Now Shosei Togo got 9 votes, and I think that's, you know, he had a good year, and that's probably about right. There's probably 9 Giants beat writers who thought he got, you know, something was held him back. And Noboru Shimizu of the Yakult Swallows got 1 vote, which is probably about the same. He was also a pretty impressive pitcher. But again, it's anybody who thought they were, especially anybody who thought Shimizu was more deserving than Morishita, probably needs his eyes examined. Sorry.
Guy. Yeah. 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 Morishita was the hands down rookie of the year.
You know, and I'm going to say it again. Why do people do these votes? Why do people cast a golden glove vote for Tomoya Mori? Because now in spring training, they can say, I gave you the golden glove. I'm the one who voted for you for golden glove.
I don't even think they're thinking about it that much.
I'm the one who voted. I voted for you for Rookie of the Year. I voted. But the players like it. Well, they appreciate it that people are paying attention to them, even if they know it's made. Although in this case, it might be far-fetched. I remember Egoro Mogi, when I told him that I'd voted for him for Rookie of the Year, he was really happy. Of course, I wasn't the only one, because he was a pretty good player.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they're happy that people recognize them. And so, but Noboru Shimizu, okay, yeah, that's a I voted for you kind of vote.
Yeah, I thought in the Pacific League, Kobukata probably was more consistent over a longer period and had more impact. But I really did like Taita, and
I think he would be a good reliever. Good on you.
What's that?
I thought you picked Kaima to win, Kaima Taira to win. So
I did.
But his last name for some reason. You picked Taira to win. So
yeah, I did. But I mean, if you really look at it, over the more consistent player over a larger stretch of the season was Kobukata.
Well, so, you know, it's not a. It was a close vote. I think it was a vote that was reasonable, 144 to 125. Yeah, take 6 of one, half dozen of the other. Well done, both guys.
Okay, right. So then we also had the best 9 selections that came out, and the Giants led the way in that regard. With they had the most best 9 selections in MPB with 5. So that more than the obviously stacked SoftBank Hawks, and that I guess that selection of 5 best 9 players kind of cemented or told me that Yomiuri's talent gap in the CL was clear and obvious.
Yeah. And, I thought there were some interesting choices, and you alluded to this earlier. And then in the Central League MVP voting, it was Sugano by pretty much a landslide over Kazuma Okamoto, with Yudai Ono coming third. Yudai Ono, the Sawamura Award winner. But I would also point out that the Sawamura Award is not voted on by the media. It's a different dynamic.
Right.
But again, this is I'll mention a topic that has always concerned me, is that okay? So in the best 9 voting, Sugano and Ono was the runner up to Sugano. Sugano got 201 votes. Ono got 111. So basically half as many people thought that, you know, Ono was as good as Sugano.
Yeah, and that was my WTF moment when I saw the voting and the big gap of 90 votes. Why is the Sawamura Award? And I know, to be clear, the Sawamura Award is for a guy who is is honored or recognized for being most like Eiji Sawamura, a pitcher who
did everything.
So it doesn't really mean that he's the best pitcher, but the benchmarks that they set up and the things that you have to do, it really does.
I mean, it is part. That's part of it.
It does. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily equate to that, especially in the media.
But it's divorced of the pennant. They don't. It's not 100% divorced from the pennant because they will talk about it. But they talk about in the Sawamura Awards, they talk about winning the championship in the same way that I do, which is it's sort of gravy. You know, it's something to consider, but it's
right.
not the be all and end all. Okay. So just to go back to this, Sugano's point total, they have three, you vote first, second, third place in Japan. And Sugano's point total was 1,438 points. And Ono, with third, had 303 points. So essentially, the voters, when voting for who's the best pitcher, two out of three picked Sugano. When who's the best player, five out of six voted for Sugano. So you get where I'm going with this. Which is, if you think, now I'm okay. I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to say you should value the pennant less or you should value the pennant more. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I'm saying that if a third of you think Ono is the better player, was the better pitcher, why would 5/6 of you then turn around and vote for Sugano as the best player in the league when a third of you thought that Ono was a better player than Sugano?
Yeah, so that was, like I said, that was my WTF moment, and I didn't get it. I'm like, how can this guy be winning the Sawamura Award in the eyes? And I know it's a different committee, and these are former players who decide on the Sawamura Award, but the media can't see. That's why I complain every year that they don't know what they're looking at. They just look at a couple of numbers.
Here's the thing they could do.
Strikeouts in ERA. But
here's the thing they could
do. Other than wins, Ono led and everything else.
Yeah, there was no way. I mean, and the Sawamura committee puts a lot of – the reason Sugano was in the running for the Sawamura was because he won all those games. I mean, they basically said, look, he won 14 games, dude, so he deserves to be in the conversation. But then in the end, they said, look, we got to pick one guy, and the best guy is Ono. Okay, so here's that. But how about this idea? They have the Sawamura. You know, some writers need help.
Help?
They need help. I mean, clinical help.
Hashtag
so how about they hold the Sawamura award-winning committee the last day of the regular season? And then because the voters basically have the voters on the awards have until the last day before the Japan series. The voters on the awards, the deadline is the day before the Japan series.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had the Sawamura awards, the day the season ends, you know, or the day after the season ends, it would give these people who need help. And they've got a pitcher in mind. At least give them some help because these people need help. They need people to say, no, here's another idea. Because, like I said, the Sawamura Award is not divorced from the pennant.
Right.
Consider it. But it's not a who's the best guy on the pennant winning team award.
Right. All right. Well, we could obviously talk about this forever. And like I said, there wasn't too much to complain about, but again, with the best nines, I didn't understand that. Well, I understood it.
Again,
the Japanese media, again, just being lost and not knowing what they're looking at.
I don't have really any complaints. I have a couple of comments.
Sure.
Hayato Sakamoto was a runaway winner at shortstop, which is fine. He's an offensive. He had a good defensive season. I don't think he's a great defensive player, but he had a good defensive season for him. I thought the interesting thing was the Pacific League voters basically picked three outfielders and left everybody else out. Fourth place got half as many votes as third place. The Central League, there was a lot more discussion. The three winners were Keita Sano, Yoshihiro Maru, and Seiya Suzuki. Mm-hmm. But fourth was a close fourth, Takayuki Kajitani. Fifth was not that far behind either. So there was some discussion about that, which is interesting.
Only at shortstop, I thought, and honestly, if Sakamoto, I don't know how much better he was in certain situations, but he wasn't. He's a really good shortstop.
But as a hitter, if you throw the hitting in, it's really hard to think anybody's up with him, right?
Yeah, I just thought Kyoto might have deserved a few more votes, but he wasn't going to win. But,
the Pacific League was interesting. Hiroto Kobukata got 103 votes to Sosuke Genda's 161. I think that there was some. I don't think Kobukata is better. I think he's going to be better in about 2 years, but that was interesting.
Interesting. Okay, and we also had the Gold Gloves announced yesterday, which was Friday, and not too many surprises there. I thought the biggest surprise for me was that the Dragons, and we talked about because of that question that we had, and I can't remember who it was. Was it Pete last year, mm-hmm. who sent us the question about our best, who the best infielders, and we went across the whole diamond, I think, and we talked about the good fielding that the Dragons had, and they had three Gold Glove winners this past season. Diane Viciado at first getting his first Gold Glove, and Shuhei Takahashi getting his second at third, and then Yohei Oshima in center. And yeah, all right, but really? But I'm glad. I mean, I'm happy for them. It was really good.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of I think the Gold Gloves probably have the most he's been there before bias.
Yes.
So pretty much
name recognition.
The guy who's won the last 2 years is not hobbling and can still throw. Yeah. I mean, give him a Gold Glove.
Give him, award him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we saw that. We saw, I guess, the completely, totally lopsided vote was the Pacific League for catcher. Takuya Kai got 267 of 269 votes.
Yeah, that's probably a little too many.
Yeah, it's too many, but I think it reflects not really, it doesn't mean he's 200 times better than every catcher, 100 times better than every catcher in the Pacific League, but I think it reflects that 100 times as many people think he's the best catcher in the Pacific League.
Right.
I would go with that. I think that's accurate. I don't think there's a huge gap. I think Tatsuro Tamura, who got one vote, is a really good catcher.
Yeah, he's really good. Really good.
Tomio Mori. Yeah, well, I don't know what to say about giving him a vote for the Golden Glove other than maybe a relative writes or something and has an award to vote or something.
Whoa. Don't forget to vote the friends and family.
Because we have an up-and-comer challenging. Now, Ryutaro Umeno of the Hanshin Tigers won his third straight, and he's just a crackerjack catcher, and I love him. I love him as a player, too. I love him as a base runner, but his Golden Glove, he won his third straight. But Takuya Kinoshita, the Dragons, really made a name for himself, and that was the closest race. Well, I would say second closest race, 136 to 117. Umeno beat Kinoshita, so... But I like that result, although I did vote for Umeno.
Yeah, Takuya Kinoshita getting a lot of support for his work behind the plate.
I think that was the Dragons thing, though, is people recognized that the guys were making the plays in the same way they recognized last year the Giants guys were making the plays. The other interesting one is Shuta Tonosaki, who had a brilliant year second base last year and didn't win the award, did win the award at second base this year.
Yeah, yeah. And
good for him. And the other one was we had a tie at first base. In fact, it was close to being a three-way tie. Akira Nakamura of the SoftBank Hawks and Sho Nakata of the Nippon Ham Fighters each got 77 votes. And Seiya Inoue, your guy.
Chubbs.
The other Chubbs will be jealous. I won't tell him you said that. Okay. Got 75. So it was close to being a three-way tie, which I think would be really cool.
Yeah. You flew by everything. I wanted to talk about Akira Nakamura, who's, you know, basically an outfielder who, similar to Sho Nakata, really, you know, they were just looking for a position to put him so they could get his bat in the lineup on a regular basis. And he wins a gold glove here. And so I thought that was pretty impressive. And
Deserving. I didn't. This is a year. I think the gold glove voting is better than the best nine voting. The reason typically it's better is because they give you a ballot with it's done digitally, and they give you a ballot, and you can write in people's names, but basically you have to just push the button. So you don't get best nine awards for guys, you know, a best nine vote for a guy who played 10 games at third base, you know, who was a second, you know, a bad second baseman, but you wanted to give him a vote, so you vote for him at third.
All right, let's make a two-steam transition and talk about the recent free agent move. So I haven't seen all that many, but the big ones that I think people noticed that were very conspicuous, let's say, or Takayuki Kajitani going from DeNA to Yomiuri, along with right-handed pitcher Shoichi Ino. And I was really surprised. I thought the Kajitani pickup for the Giants reminded me of when they went out and got Daikon Yo, or Yes We Can, or whatever we call him. What's our official name for him?
Young Daikon?
Yeah. Because it's a player they don't necessarily need. If he pops for them and is someone they can't take out of the lineup, that's a good pickup for them. But if he's somebody who ends up they have to platoon all the time, you know, you're going to wonder about the amount of money. And of course, it's the Giants. They have plenty of money to spend, so it's not really a financial hit. But this is a guy we talked about. He really had a good season, but he had a good season mostly because he stayed healthy enough to play. He has never really disappointed when he has been healthy. The problem is, you know, we've seen him sidelined more often than we've seen him on the field in recent at times in his career. So, and then Ino, I just said, that's kind of odd. Is that a good pickup or a bad pickup for them? I don't even know. I guess they want to get a guy who can eat some innings, who has some experience, but this isn't someone who's going to add anything to that rotation. I thought the rotation was fine last year, and like we said, that, you know, that team clearly had more talent than the other teams in the Central League.
Yeah,
so kind of odd pickups for me.
Move, and also we're gonna sign. I think it was a depth move. There were basically three usable free agents on the market after Tatsushi Masuda quickly re-signed with the Cebu Lions, and that was Takayuki Kajitani, Shoichi Ino, and Yasuhiro Ogawa.
Of the Swallows, who's still out there, right?
Swallows, who's still on the market, although the Swallows are trying to say, come on back. Apparently they're discussing incentive packages. So, you know, it was okay, but he's, you know, he adds to that list of guys who can come in. You know, the Giants had basically four starters, and then they had a cast of thousands. So he's going to, you know, try out for that fifth spot, I guess, and see if they can get him or something. So we'll see.
Right. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean,
the interesting thing to me was there's just been this steady parade from Yokohama to Tokyo Dome. I don't know, it started maybe with Ken Kadokura, and then there was Shuichi Murata, and then Shun Yamaguchi, and there were a couple others, of course, but those were the big names.
The big name guys,
The last three guys I mentioned, every time the Bay Stars took a player in compensation, and as you remember, Ken Kadokura gave the Giants a shock because they ended up giving up Kimiyasu Kudo. Because they didn't protect him, because they thought nobody would sign a guy who was making $3 million a year.
At 40-something.
Yeah, and he did. And then Shuichi Murata they, I don't remember who they got for him, but Shun Yamaguchi, they got, now here's the DNA, and I wasn't trying to slag off DNA, but they are very sharp. I mean, they do, I've met some of their analytics people, and I was impressed by their, basically by how smart they are. And I think they, when the Giants took Shun Yamaguchi, they went, Kentaro Taira, this guy can play. So they got Kentaro Taira, who's a pretty decent pitcher for Shun Yamaguchi, and he's still playing for DeNA, and Yamaguchi's with the Toronto Blue Jays, so that's not a bad deal. And why the Bay Stars announced they were taking yesterday is Shun Tanaka, who's better known as the younger brother of Hiroshima Carp shortstop Kosuke Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think he's a pretty good player. So that's not a bad deal. They got a 27-year-old guy who's got a young guy who's got some skill, and they got Kentaro Taira before, because the protected list is now, I think, just 28 players. So when the Giants take somebody and they take one of your top guys on your team, there's some talent there.
Yeah, and you have to make a good decision, I think, and choosing the guys you go after as compensation. And if that's one thing DeNA has been able to do, that's another thing, because they usually hit on a lot of their import players, and if they hit on the free agent compensation as well, they can add some talent. So, but yeah, they're gonna have a rookie manager again next year. So,
who and just the last word about DeNA in this one, who's I keep seeing over and over about how he was. His team was big on bunting in the Eastern League, and they finished well, and they bunted. They led the Eastern League in sacrifice bunts last year. So there's that.
All right.
I can't wait, baby. You really
can't wait to see all that.
Bring on the season. Bring on those sacrifice bunts.
All right. So making a one-seam transition, we did want to mention that the discussion of the universal DH is persisting. Now, we have a question that we're going to answer next time, and it's a question about the Central League being dominated and basically becoming a slave to the Pacific League in terms of
everything or something.
Everything. I mean, the Pacific League, look at the streaming services, talent on the field, Japan Series, Interleague, fan interaction. They're leading in everything.
Maybe in Japan, the gap, sort of like the degree to which the PL beats up on the CL will put S&M out of business, and they'll just start calling it PNC. I don't know.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah. Anyway, I did see a story in some paper, and we'll get to this question probably in the next time that we do a show. Oh. But the universal DH, I guess it's picking up steam. I don't like it, but I got used to seeing it in the National League this year because we had
COVID
season, right? So it was the COVID rule. And I'm a traditionalist in this aspect, and it's not really something I want to see come to the Central League, but I've seen how it worked this past season.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, in the National League, in the United States, in the major leagues. And while I can't really agree with the notion that PL pitchers don't hit well, because they seem to really step up to the plate in all aspects of that term during Interleague and in the past during the Japan Series, it seems like they always out hit their Central League counterparts. So that's really not a thing to me. But I think it takes away from the strategy when you don't have to make or put more thought into when you make pitching changes and how and who and for what batters. And if you can just, randomly take out pitchers without consequence to the batting order, that just seems to take something away from the game for me. So seeing that disappear would be, something that I would obviously miss. But baseball around the world seems to be going in that direction, so I guess it's a natural progression for the game. So I certainly will welcome it if it comes, but I will hold out as long as I can.
The surprise to me was not so much that somebody said the CL should use, the Central League should use the DH, as much as it was the Yomiuri Giants who said the CL should use the DH. Because the Giants are kind of like, well, okay, I'm going to be, I guess, crass and snide about this, but basically every time they want something that's new, they talk about how the game has to go in that direction. And every time they're happy, you know, every time their position is enhanced by the game not changing, every time their power influence is threatened by change, they say, no, we're traditionalists. Baseball is tradition. Well, the argument the Giants voiced for the DH, at least as expressed by manager Tatsunori Hara after the Giants got their part had body parts left on the field after the Japan series, was,
I didn't even see any body parts. It was just grease balls everywhere.
Okay, grease spots. Where they were vaporized.
Gobs.
Was that the Central League can't compete against the Pacific League without the DH. So one reason, they gave three reasons. One, the Central League is lame, and that's basically correct. Two, pitchers get hurt. Central League pitchers got hurt more this year than Pacific League pitchers did. And third, fans get bored watching pitchers give away at bats. Okay. That happens.
I can attest to that. You know, sometimes I'll flip a channel if a pitcher's coming up, but, you know, that gives me opportunity to watch a different game. What's the problem?
Yeah. John's the glass half full guy.
Yes, not the glass half broken. But, yeah, so I look, we've talked about it before in the past that the Central League teams don't carry a guy who's specifically a DH, and that it might impact their team. So this will give the teams an opportunity to have a person or a player on the team who can fill that role, who's used to it, maybe a couple. It'll be different, but I don't know that it'll be better.
When I did a fairly long piece about the Central League and Pacific League difference called The Gap on my website, I looked up this stuff, and I've looked it up quite a lot, actually. Like, what's the difference between the eight non-DH non-pitchers league against league, and what's the difference between the DH's league, DH's league against league, and the pitchers batting league against league, and the Pacific League DHs do a lot better, but the Giants DHs have hit better than their opponents' DHs. So again, this smacks of, we've got the money to pay for DHs, so let's have them whenever possible.
Right. Well, again, I would think if all the teams, because it's fair for everyone, and if all the teams know that they're going to have that spot on their roster, then they're going to fill it appropriately. And so
Giants tend to pick up, they sign lots of free agents. They tend to sign older guys with big names and big bats. So they've pretty much been a natural for DHs.
Right. And then one last thing before we go, I did a spot on the Sports Info Solutions podcast when they did their Fielding Bible Awards, and they came out recently, and I did a spot with Mark Simon, someone I've listened to on Baseball Today when it was called that, and then Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. And in fact, Mark and I were talking because I said, look, Mark, I've been listening to this podcast in different iterations for a very long time. And I can remember the first guy who started it. And I said, what's his name? And Mark said, what are you talking about? Eric Carabel? And I said, no, before him. Wow. And so he went way back. He said, Peter Pascarelli. And I'm like, no, before him. And I couldn't remember the name. And then one day it popped into my head, Schwartz, the name was Schwartz.
Alan Schwartz.
And that's right. It was Alan Schwartz who started it. And I said that he was the inspiration.
It surprised me that he started something like that. It's sufficiently nerdy. Sorry, Alan.
And I said he was the inspiration for me because I was out running. And I'm like, you know, because I used to, you know, listen to that when I was out jogging. Now it's Baseball Tonight. But and he called it the fastest 14 minutes in baseball. And he would, you know, review scores and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, we should be doing something like this. He was part of the inspiration for JBW. So anyway, they came out and did the Fielding Bible Awards, and I didn't agree with most of them. It looked like they just went, and I know you voted, I voted, Jason Koskrey voted, some other people voted.
Yeah,
it just looked like they grabbed the UZR numbers and just went with those guys.
Well, now they have actually have people looking at video, but I don't know how much video they look at.
Yeah, I would say not enough, but yeah, it was. I guess it's a close guesstimate if you're not watching the games and to put all those things into context and everything. But it was a fun exercise. I enjoyed it.
They had Kai, and I saw the Delta Graphs came up, and Delta Graphs had Kinoshita over Umeno at catcher, which is
not me. I would not. But yeah, what's that?
I didn't see it. I picked Umeno because he's the guy and he's won before, but because, you know, more years gives you more body of work.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the whole thing, the aspect of catching isn't just throwing out runners.
No. No, it is not.
And so
did I say that? I missed it.
No, you didn't say that.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, I think a lot of people just think, well, you know, does the guy throw runners?
Just like, you know, and I agree, that's analogous to people saying that manager's job is knowing when to pinch hit and who to pinch hit, you know, how to make out the lineup card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot more, That's the part that we can see, but there's a lot of stuff that we don't see. But anyway, Sports Info Solutions. It was really fun. It was a really fun exercise to do that.
It's good. And the best under 90-second explanation of what we do on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. I was crying. I was in tears. Of course, I cry easily. But yeah, it was good stuff.
All right. So we do have a question for next time. We will get to it then. When that is, I do not know. So
we have the next big event we have in other than guys moving to the majors, we have three posted guys who are on the clock, and then we've got the Hall of Fame coming up on January 14th. So, and people want to know how I'm guessing most of you seen the story I did on my website yesterday about my Hall of Fame picks. If you haven't, check it out.
All right, so we got that in, and then now you said the next big event was the Hall of Fame, and
Hall of Fame on January 14th.
All right, so we probably won't have a show until next year. So happy holidays to all of you, and we'll be back bright and early in the new year to hopefully introduce a new player coming to Japan, and we'll follow that up with an interview with a player who spent some time in the Pacific League. So. Happy holidays to you all. Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you next year. Enjoy your off season.
See you next year.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.